Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the November 1st, 2016 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. A couple of things. If you have electronic devices, cell phones, or other things, please silence them. And that includes legislators. If in case of an emergency, the exits are to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. Tonight, before the regular meeting starts, we have a public hearing. And also, we have a second public hearing tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. So we will break wherever we are at the during the regular meeting and go into that public hearing on the budget. So the first public hearing tonight is on Local Law F of 2016, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law, Section 467-J, which is restricted sale price exemption for housing trust houses. Is there anyone here tonight to speak on the public hearing for the adoption, for or against the adoption of the local law? Yes, please step to the microphone.
Good evening. My name is Paul Mazzarella. I'm Executive Director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services. I'm here to urge you to vote for the local law in support of affordable housing. And I also want to specifically thank Joe Mariana, Jay Franklin, and all the members of the Tompkins County Legislature who previously passed a resolution that supported this change in state law. And for those of you who haven't followed this, and probably most of you haven't, as it went through both the Senate and the Assembly, it was unanimously voted by every committee and by both bodies in support. So there is broad, wide, bipartisan support for this effort. And I hope that you take the next step tonight by enacting the local law that will make it possible for these homeowners to actually receive property tax exemptions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Last call for any speakers at the public hearing. All right, I'll close the public hearing. And would you please stand with me and pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I'm present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present.
We have quorum. Everyone's here. And let me say that we've had wonderful attendance at our regular board meetings by this legislature this year. Let's keep it up through the end of the year. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm very pleased tonight that we have a proclamation, which I'd like to read. It says, whereas the County of Tompkins, New York, recognizes the nearly 300 home health aides who provide care to hundreds of residents in our area, and whereas home health aides provide high-quality and compassionate health care services to those in need, especially at times of crisis, and whereas home health aides work conscientiously to provide services and care, enabling individuals to remain in their homes and live as independently as possible, and whereas home health aides are vital members of our health care team and improve the quality of life of our older citizens, people with disabilities and their families. And whereas November is National Home Care and Hospice Month, and November 13th through November 19th is National Home Care Aid Week, and whereas the Health Planning Council of Tompkins County, home care agencies, and other organizations in this community are sponsoring activities in recognition of the contribution of the home health care aid. Now, I therefore, Michael Lane, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do proclaim the month of November 2016 as Home Health Aid Appreciation Month in Tompkins County, and urge citizens of the community to honor and celebrate this special event. And I'm going to ask Lisa Holmes if she would please come up. She's director of our County Office for the Aging, and I'd like to hand the proclamation to her.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I just have a few brief remarks. I wanted to just say that the work of home health aides fosters dignity, respect, and independence for the growing number of older adults in our community. And the profession of home care and the workers themselves are equally as deserving of this dignity, respect, and independence. The importance of home health care to families and to all of us can't be overstated. I really appreciate the fact that our county legislature is publicly honoring home health care workers with this proclamation, and I want to thank you all for that. I'm also very proud to mention, I want to mention that our aging services representative from the State Office for the Aging, Cindy Cather, is with us today from Albany. I happened to bring her along.
You want to stand up?
And I'm just very proud to be able to show one of the many ways that our legislature is active and supportive of aging services and of home health aides in our community. And I wanted to introduce John Mazzello from the Health Planning Council, who's going to talk a little bit about some work that we've been doing together in our community.
John, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Lisa, and thanks to all of you for the proclamation. I wanted to draw your attention to something that's been put at your seats, the Home Care from the Heart event, which will be recognizing home health aides in our community. It's the pink paper with the invitation on it. I'd like to invite you to attend if you'd like, if you're able, to come on November 16th, it's a Wednesday, from 4 to 6 at the Ramada Inn here in Ithaca, to really publicly thank the home health aides. We'll be sharing the proclamation there and also be having some fun. In addition to showing all of our appreciation on behalf of the Health Planning Council and the Long-Term Care Committee there, but also to do some learning and some gathering and some building up of our networks. There will be, from our friends at Ithaca College, a one-hour workshop on music as medicine that will both help to support and elevate the home health aides and also help them to come back to work with their clients and take that strategy of music as medicine to share with the folks that they work with. It's a really modest entry for those who are attending who aren't home health aides, and that allows us to make the entire event free for aides and their guests. So that's very... their guests. That's great. This event has been supported by the Health Foundation of Western and Central New York and really put together by a range of us here in the community, from some of the agencies that employ home health aides to the Office for the Aging to the Health Planning Council and to others in our community, putting this fun event together as a way to say thank you. So if you're interested in attending, and I really encourage you to be there to say thanks personally, there's information on how to RSVP and to sign up. So thanks very much again. And we appreciate your support of home health aides here in Tompkins County.
Thank you. They do such important work. Announcement of executive sessions, reordering of business and special orders of the day. I don't believe we have an executive session scheduled for tonight. Is that correct, Joe and Jonathan?
Correct.
Okay. And we may reorder some of the business as we go along to try to accommodate folks in the audience. We're going to move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that members of the public have to come and speak to their county legislature on any topic. They're allowed up to 3 minutes. In order to speak, we ask that you please sign one of these blue cards in the back of the room and pass it up. By signing the card, you're agreeing to our rules. You're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you're agreeing to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. If you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. The 3 minutes is kept track of on the screen to my left on the wall. At the end of the 3 minutes, there'll be an audible ring. At that time, if you're still speaking, we ask that you please conclude. We'll take them in the order that we receive them. Anybody else that wants to send one up can do so. We'll start with Deborah Dietrich and then Mike Kaplinka-Lair. Deborah Dietrich, a former member of the Tompkins County Board of Representatives.
Good evening. It's great to be here. I'll be brief. I don't think we'll hit the 3 minute. I'm here tonight as Executive Director of OAR to basically thank you for your support of OAR over the many years, but particularly this year with your foresight and vision of hopefully granting an additional $70,000 for our new College Initiative Upstate program. We've already seen it make a difference in 18 of our clients' lives, and we're very hopeful to keep growing that program so that those who are formerly incarcerated have a pathway to a higher education, starting at TC3 frequently. I'll also take just a moment to say I'm really very thrilled about the proposal to put $50,000 a year for each of the next 3 years into transitional housing through the Human Service Coalition and the Continuum of Care. I think it shows it'll help be a catalyst for us to raise other funds from other sources to really begin to meet the housing needs, and I will speak particularly of those who have been formerly incarcerated. It's a dire situation out there. So thank you all. I very much appreciate it, and I am looking forward to a really great vote on November 15th. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Mike Kaplinka-Lair and then Sean Wilsinski. Michael is a former county legislator, former chair of this legislature.
Thank you, Michael, and good to see you again. Again, I'm Mike Kaplinka-Lair from 118 Ross Road in Lansing. I'm here to speak to member filed resolution M. And if I leave you with any words relating to M, it's the merits of the mine shaft, not the mine. The wording of the resolution M speaks to the mine and underground infrastructure. I'm calling into question reasons for rescinding the negative declaration, but I think it's inappropriately and misplaced. It should only be focusing on the mine shaft. I'm a 50-year county resident. Our first home was passive solar. Our present home is active solar. We've put most of our acreage into a conservation easement. I think most people would be hard-pressed to say that my wife and I are not environmentalists. I also have a master's degree in planning, so although I'm not a salt mine expert, I do understand the role of policy and processes, and I appreciate those who follow the rules. Additionally, I live next door to and downhill from the proposed elevator shaft under question in the member filed resolution. So my wife and I are arguably the most impacted, I believe, of the entire project. If you think of your senses, it's light impact, sound. The ground is shaking. We're going to feel it. We're going to smell it. We have the most impacts. Although I believe the intentions are valid, this resolution is misplaced. A key point I'd like to make regarding this wording to ask to rescind the negative declaration is that Cargill has fully evaluated the impact of this expansion, the shaft expansion. It pertains to the 12.3 acres of the surface infrastructure as well and the disturbances and impacts of that. The rest of the underground mine workings have been evaluated and addressed through prior permitting processes, are not subject to review in this process. From an environmental standpoint, the mine's been operating under the mine land reclamation permit since 1975. That's 41 years. Been numerous permit renewals, modifications, all of which have required thorough and robust environmental review. Both Cargill and DEC have utilized numerous external third-party experts. The wording in the resolution says there hasn't been independent analysis. There has been. The fact that the mine's been operating for nearly 100 years without significant impact to the environment is proof Cargill is both responsible, but DEC is providing proper governance. 15 years ago, and ever since then, Cargill has been required to file an annual report with the DEC, primarily focused on mine stability, mine planning, overall performance. The mine stability is reviewed by an independent consultant, and they facilitate an annual meeting inspection of the mine. I actually believe what's underlying this resolution is a mistrust. All right, I'll conclude. I think it is a mistrust of the DEC, and I ask that you consider that indeed the DEC is doing its job, and to, if you want to attack something, attack the process, not an applicant. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Sean Wilsinski, please.
So good evening. My name is Sean Wilsinski.
Just set up if it will help
okay.
you.
So good evening. My name is Sean Wilsinski. I'm the mine manager for Cargill in Lansing, New York. So what I want to make sure is everyone understands we all have the same goals in mind. You know, my primary responsibility is the safety of the 200 employees that work there, followed closely by the sustainability of the mine so that Cargill can continue to provide over a million tons of road salt to our largest customer, which is the state of New York, every single year. And the sustainability of the mine, which cannot happen unless you're a responsible, environmental, conscientious company, especially in this day and age. So we're very responsible. I think what a lot of people don't understand is how heavily regulated mining is. So for 41 years, we've been heavily regulated by MSHA. There's an MSHA inspector on site for half of the entire year looking at employee safety and mine stability. Also, as you mentioned, the DEC has been, we've been under mine line reclamation since 1975. 41 years of rigorous environmental review and process has been associated with that, including numerous reviews going all the way back most recently to 2003, 2007, 2012, 2013, and 2015. Okay, so I have up here a mine map real quick. Everything, as pointed out in the white, which is hard to see, this whole white part underneath of the lake, the southern extent in the north, and the white portion there represents 13,500 acres that are already approved through the DEC process and are part of our mine land reclamation permit. As Mr. Kaplink-Allaire mentioned, that none of that lateral geology or anything is part of the review process that has been put out for public comment. The only portions are the 12.3 surface acres and the shaft itself. Now, Cargill is not going to go try and spend $45 million on a shaft if they felt it would put that major asset to risk, obviously, right? We spent decades, if not very focused for the past 4 years, bringing in countless third-party experts, mine stability reviews, hydrology, geology, mine shaft experts, everything else to help us devise the right plan in order to sink a shaft safely. At the end, we also followed it up with the true validation of drilling a core hole within 50 feet of where the shaft is proposed. That has verified the geology and the hydrology right next to where the shaft is going to go. There's nothing else that you can do diligence-wise that would provide that level of detail. Okay, so the diligence has been done. The DEC, as you mentioned, been there for 45 years or 40-plus years. They are experts. They have a holistic viewpoint of the entire thing, and I can tell you from my experience, they've been doing their job. I'm not a DEC spokesperson, but I know that for the past 15 years, every single year, we have an annual review, including an external third-party review by mine stability experts, and they come to our facility, and we do a mine stability review and a mine inspection. Okay. So I'll just finish up real quick by mentioning the proof, as they say, is in the pudding. 100 years without a single significant environmental impact on this area, I believe, is proof that the Cargill has been a responsible person and that the DEC is doing their proper governance. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Deborah Sepola-Dennis. Deborah, you mentioned that you're going to be talking about the budget. It's perfectly acceptable to talk about the budget on Privilege of the Floor. I just want to make everyone aware you also can talk about the budget during our public hearing on the budget later in the meeting, or you can do both. After Deborah, we have Rob McKenzie.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, I wanted to talk on the budget. I have another thing that I have to go to, so I'm not going to be here at 7 o'clock when you do the hearing for that. But I wanted to start by thanking you all for all your work on the budget. Being on the town board this year, it was eye-opening to see what that process is like, and I really appreciate everything that you've gone through, and I know it's been tough on our side, and I'm sure it's hard here. And I also wanted to thank those of you that have been real advocates for getting LGBTQ and people of color diversity training into that budget and supporting that. I really appreciate that. I also wanted to say that I support the funding increases for OAR and the transitional housing. I think that that is really important. And I'm really happy to see that, especially in a year that I know that sales tax is going down and it's probably difficult to squeeze in everything that you want to do. What I handed out, and it should be going around, hopefully all of you have it, is an executive summary to a report that was put out by the Williams Institute. I know a couple of people talked about this at the last meeting. I didn't talk about it at the last meeting because I hadn't had a chance to review it yet. I have had a chance to review that, and it has a really nice executive summary, so you don't have to read all 28 pages of the report. I did want to call out a few things that are in here. It starts by saying discrimination and harassment by law enforcement based on sexual orientation and gender identity is an ongoing and pervasive problem in the LGBT community. Such discrimination impedes effective policing in these communities by breaking down trust, inhibiting communication, and preventing officers from effectively protecting and serving the communities they police. That is the conclusion of this report. I felt like that was really important. It goes on to talk about some statistics in here. What really caught my eye is on page 2, right in the middle of the first section, the second bullet there. It talks about the interactions of law enforcement, specifically with Latina gender women and in Los Angeles County. And they found that 2/3 of these women reported that they had been verbally harassed by law enforcement. And these statistics that are in here really represent things that LGBTQ people go through every day and the reasons that there are fears when we travel. And so by strengthening the training in our governments, like in our police forces, it really helps to make a safe environment. And so I commend what you're doing now, and I'd really like to see that strengthened. I'd like to see it made mandated instead of just optional, and really see that these practices continue. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Rob McKenzie, then Marie McRae.
Thank you. My name is Rob McKenzie. I speak as a public citizen in support of Resolution M concerning Cargill. For 3 years, I have studied health and safety issues related to the use of Finger Lakes salt layers. I have seen how the mining and storage industries often work side by side with regulators, and both speak proudly of their care and expertise. They assure us that the highest level of safety makes good business sense and that we can trust them to do their jobs and keep us safe. The problem is that the proof is not in the pudding. Neither industry nor regulators have been able to prevent salt geology catastrophes in our part of New York State every 10 to 20 years. It's the same in other states with salt geology like Ohio, Michigan, Nebraska, and Louisiana. In 1965, it was the sudden, unanticipated salinization of Seneca Lake to health hazard levels probably triggered by a Schuyler County salt cavern gas storage project. In 1975, it was the closure of Morton Salt's Himrod mine in Yates County after several years of Seneca Lake brine pollution caused by unanticipated leakage of water into the mine. This mine lies just 13 miles west of Cargill's Cayuga Lake site. In 1995, it was an unanticipated collapse at AkzoNobel's 100-year-old salt mine in Livingston County that resulted in uncontrolled cascades of water into the mine. That led to many meters of brown subsidence that destroyed roads, bridges, homes, wells, farmland, and industry. In each case, companies had good geologists and the best of intentions. In each case, regulators either saw no reason to slow the company down or said they couldn't. In each case, things went just fine, sometimes for 100 years, before a disaster struck. What have we learned? We've learned that with treacherous salt geology, unforeseen disasters happen again and again. We've learned that companies push the envelope, and DEC sometimes doesn't push back. And we've learned that leaving matters just to industry and regulators is Einstein's definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. In this case, to my best knowledge, matters may be even worse, because in the 45 years since DEC was formed, to my knowledge, although it submits permits and agrees to reviews, Cargill has still not agreed that the state has any right to regulate its underground operations. You've all had a chance to read Dr. Warren's report outlining additional ways in which we can reduce the risk of a disaster and similarities between this and the other disaster sites and this mine. As former Assemblyman Marty Luster put it at hearings after the Axo mine disaster, a disaster here could make Cayuga Lake the world's third largest inland body of salt water. For Mine Shaft 4, we know Cargill has already budgeted and planned for a public environmental impact process in DIS. I can finish in two sentences. Mr. Luster said at his AXO hearings, without citizen involvement of this sort, we can't do our jobs. Please urge DEC to allow for careful, open public consideration of the environmental and safety impacts of this project before it's too late. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. McKenzie. Marie McCray, please. Then Thomas Shelley.
My name is Marie McCray. I live on Irish Settlement Road in the town of Dryden. And I'm here to speak to Cargill's request for a new mine shaft. I don't have the details that the previous speakers have offered you about this project. I'm here tonight because I am simply amazed that we could consider such a project without giving it the most rigorous inspection that we could possibly do under the existing regulations. I am here to ask you to require a full environmental impact statement for this project. Our lake is too precious to skip that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas Shelley, then Brian Eden.
Good evening. I'm Thomas Shelley. I live across the street, actually, 118 East Court Street, so you all are in my front yard right now. I'm with Conservation Advisory Council for the City of Ithaca, and so I represent the city to the Environmental Management Council, and I also am chair of the Board of Directors of Sustainable Tompkins and very heavily involved in many other environmentally related groups in the city. I'm here to comment on the Cargill issue. I don't have any doubt that Cargill is trying to do a due diligence. You know, they seem like a good firm from what their superintendent here is reporting. And I have no doubt that the DEC, although they're under a tremendous amount of stress, are doing the best that they can under the duress that they're under. And so not everything gets looked at as carefully as it could be, I think. Also, there was an issue with distribution of documents that DEC did not distribute a lot of documents that people could have looked at in advance for comment as well. And, you know, aside from any of the salt geology issues, there are still other environmental concerns that could be addressed by an EAS. And I was disappointed the DEC didn't have didn't develop an EIS for this project, and I was even more deeply disappointed that the legislature didn't support the Environmental Management Council's resolution requesting an EIS be developed for this project. And it's not just the salt geology. I said there are other issues as well that an EIS could have addressed. And, of course, the EIS is a point of public input that didn't happen. You know, it's not exactly democracy in action. Let me give one little example in the few seconds I have left here. The environmental design research, which is a firm, I guess, conducted visual impact analysis that demonstrated basically that there's no real impact from the tower visually. And we have done other studies, and I think John is going to pass out packets of information that has the same thing here that I'm sure you have already. Great. So this is a viewshed document. And the viewshed, it shows where you see the tower in the winter and where you see the tower in the leafy season in the summer. Of course, you don't see it so much in the summer as you do in the winter. Oh, good. Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
They can't hear you if you're not at a microphone.
It still needs review. The point is, we have a few seconds left. The point is, things like this still need review and aren't being reviewed. We'd appreciate the chance to have that reviewed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shelley. We have Brian Eden. Then we have Joanne Sepulveda-Dennis, who I just think went outdoors.
So, as you know, I'm vice chair of the EMC. I don't know if I can assure Sean Walensky or other folks that we're not involved in an adversarial process here. We're here promoting the environmental impact assessment process. And so that's what my intention is. I don't know how it's perceived, but that's what I want to communicate to you, that it's not an intention to attack the mine owners, the mine workers. This is about doing a more thorough review of the environmental assessment. So I'm gratified that New York State DEC agreed today to a 30-day extension of the comment period. This provides an opportunity for a more democratic and transparent process. Local residents and municipalities will have the opportunity to participate more fully than was available to them in the earlier comment period. I hope that some of the outreach methods listed in the seeker document will be adopted by the DEC and the applicant. For example, some of the things that they urge them to do in the seeker handbook are, and the seeker 621.7 is to do public information meetings, post notices in the neighborhood, create local repositories for information. So as I mentioned at the PDEC meeting, the Maplewood redevelopment project was a model of interaction between residents, developers, EDR, and the planning board. And all participants heard each other, and modifications to the plans were made where appropriate. And I think most people are very satisfied with that, how that came out. So here we're in the 21st century. So the comment period will be extended. And what you, if you would want to comment, you would have to go to the DEC and see a big stack 18 inches high of a bunch of unrelated materials. They all have to do with Cargill, but it would be very hard to find what you wanted. When you do an environmental impact statement, you have all the information in one document. So I don't understand the aversion to doing that, because what we could do then is post it on the county's website. Everybody would have access to it. They wouldn't have to drive to Cortland. All their questions could be answered in one document. That's what Town of Ithaca did. They had it on their front page of their website for months so that everybody could access it. So I don't think we're asking for something really terrific. I mean, if they have all the information, all they have to do is put it in a form that can be read by people and commented upon. So why do we want to participate in this exercise of a comment period over again without somehow changing the outcome, so that we're not back here in a month saying, well, we still need that EIS because, you know, we have this very disconnected amount of information and we haven't gotten the information that we want. So we urge you to support your constituents who wish to protect the water quality of Keogh Lake, as well as the investments in their homes and cottages in the vicinity of the mining operation. A community-wide discussion will enhance the project's safety and limit potential negative impacts on the valuable assets nearby. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. The next speaker has stepped out of the room. I'm going to go to John Dennis and then Peter Bardaglio. And if there's anyone else who would like to speak tonight, please fill out a blue card and send it forward. May we have John Dennis, please?
Yes, the previous speaker who did step out, Joanne Cipolla Dennis, no relation actually, did ask if she could donate her hours, her minutes to mine. I don't know if that's possible or not.
We don't do that.
All right, thank you. So good evening. My name is John Dennis. I'm president of the Chris Dennis Foundation, set up to honor our son Chris, who drowned in Cuga Lake in 2013. His body was never found, so I hope you can understand that all of Cuga Lake will always be sacred space for my family and me. I also have the honor to serve on the Tompkins County Environmental Management Council, and it was in that context that I first became aware of Cargill's Shaft 4 project about midway through the public comment period in September. The foundation then hired eminent evaporite geologist John Warren to review the project documents that the DEC released to the public in September. It could be that once they got to read through his 30-page report that they decided that further public comment was needed. Mr. Wilczynski has sought to rebut some of Mr. Warren's concerns, so I just thought I would quickly go through four areas of concern that he did highlight. Number one, bedrock separation is only about 450 feet at Millikan Station between bottom of lake and top of salt. Retzhoff Mine had about 600 feet of bedrock separation. Two, more geologic detail is needed regarding the areas in the Cuga Mine where Cargill is already storing significant volumes of brine, which may or may not be undersaturated, and where Cargill plans to store the aquifer leakage that will be coming down the proposed Shaft 4. And I've handed out to some of you a map of the Level 4 brine, which is being stored under the town of Lansing. And when the mine is decommissioned in the future, there's a question of if there is too much brine, how would it be dealt with? Number three, more detail is needed about the Bertie-Oriskany levels that Cargill proposes to upwardly ream through. How uniform or how irregular and fractured is this aquifer medium? Number four, what do salt textures of core samples gathered at the core hole 18 indicate regarding the extent of various textures? A 320-page 2013 report by Respect Consulting and Services, a Cargill contractor, fails to impart this important, critical information. Salt textures give us a good indication of possible aquifer proximity. 1995, seismic data indicates the presence of an artesian aquifer located between the bottom of the lake basin and the top of salt. I'll just pull that up because not all of you have the graphic. I only learned about this aquifer maybe in the past week. And if you can imagine, if there is subsidence, and everyone, so I do get the other 3 minutes? Thank you.
No, you don't.
I do not.
But please take a minute and finish up.
Okay. I will leave the technical matters and quickly pass to another issue, which I find quite intriguing. There is a jurisdictional issue which explains why there probably have been no environmental impact studies done when Cargill went under the lake in 1984, when they expanded their area in 2003, and again last year, because Cargill is still not accepting that DEC has jurisdiction. It's our understanding they never go down in the mine. And while MSHA does a great job on things like diesel particulate matter, the mine is very well managed from many respects. They are not looking at the longer-term stability issues that an EIS would necessarily look at, because we do not agree that the Shaft project can be segmented. And if you Google segmentation seeker, you'll go to DEC's website and see that they must be treated together. It's considered improper, and it may even be illegal. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, we're delighted that there is another 30 days of comment period on this important project. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis. Peter Borgaglio, please.
Good evening. I'm Peter Bartaglio. I live on Arden Road in Trumansburg, and I have the honor, I think, of serving as president of Black Oak Wind Farm. I'm speaking this evening on behalf of the EMC resolution calling on DEC to rescind its neg deck and for the Cargill company to go ahead and prepare an environmental impact statement. I want to just make one quick point. You know, when we set out to develop our wind farm, which consists of only 7 turbines being installed on a hillside, we had to take 3 years, prepare 23 studies, leading to generating about 4,000 pages that cost us $500,000. Now, I, for one, find it hard to believe that we had to go ahead and carry out a thorough study like that of the environmental impact of the wind farm, and for some reason the DEC thinks not a similar process is not required for the Cargill project. So thank you, and that's just the one point I wanted to make this evening. I support everything that has been said up to this point about the real issues that exist, but I also just wanted to put it in the context of what Black Oak had to go through in terms of its seeker process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last speaker I have. We'll go to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Deborah Cipolla-Dennis was here, but I think she's left. Am I missing anyone else? All right. I'd like to go to privilege of the floor for legislators. After that, I'm going to move up, because people are here, move up the resolution having to do with the Cargill mine. So let's go to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak tonight? No hands? Oh, there's one. Martha.
Well, you know, it's, of course, about the housing summit. There's a Marsha Lynch prepared a press release today, and it went out. Thanks, Marsha. I see there's an article on the Ithaca Journal website at this point. So I just want to urge people to go to housingtompkins.com or call 273-8686, extension 221, for if you want to register by phone instead of email. We're asking that people register. We have space limitations for the full day session. November 30th in the evening is going to be held at Culp Auditorium. So unless we get past 900, I think we don't have a problem on space. But there's a space limit on the full day summit Thursday, November 1st. So it's important that people actually sign up. And whether you actually want to come and sit in these meetings or not, I hope people will go to our Facebook page, the Housing Tompkins Facebook page. So what it's called, Housing Summit, Housing Tompkins on Facebook. And just, you know, post a video, just tell your story. And this is open to absolutely anybody. If you live in Tompkins County, if you work in Tompkins County and would like to live here, or work in Tompkins County and don't want to live here, or can't afford to live here, or any of those things, if you like, if you're a builder, anybody, please go and tell your story about housing, and whether you've got what you need or whether you don't have what you need, or you want to talk about a proposed project. We are going to take the videos and stories from the Facebook page and use them during the summit on December 1st. So I just invite people to have their say in that way as well. Thanks.
Mike Sigler.
I'll be quick. I just wanted to thank everybody who was involved in Harry Potter weekend this weekend. It was very well attended yet again, and it seemed to have taken over the whole town. And I was talking to some people, and they were staying in, like, Cortland. So I'm curious to see the hotel numbers locally, because I think they were full, which is good. And it was a great weekend. Lots of credit goes out to a lot of people, so thank you for that. And Brunch Fest this weekend. Just putting that out there, because who doesn't like brunch?
Where?
It's downtown Ithaca, and I think it's Sunday, but it might be Saturday. No, it's Saturday. So go have your mimosa and get your pancake on.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Others? Quiet tonight. Mike, I'll just say that I spent some time down on the Commons during Harry Potter weekend. I tend to be a fan. I have a little great niece, a great fan, too, and I was totally amazed. The number of people, the number of costumes, the folks who are really getting into it. You know, we have festivals, at least one festival every weekend in the good weather, and probably in not so good weather, too. And we have more than one very often. And this is one more great time and something to put Tompkins County on the map.
The real question is, were you in costume? No.
Were you
well,
Fudge?
No, somebody were else you? Was.
Because we did.
Somebody else was Dumbledore, so I didn't do costume. No, I just went down as an observer. Anyone else want to speak? All right, let's move on. I'm going to move up and ask Carol Chalk if she would move her member filed resolution for discussion.
I will do that. Yes, the resolution is on packet page 47 for those of you who are following along. And I'll move it, and assuming it gets a second, I'll ask to speak about it briefly. It says Resolution M, Docket ID 6657. The Tompkins County Legislature urges the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the New York State DEC, to require Cargill, Inc. and its subsidiary Cargill De-icing Technology, Inc., otherwise known as Cargill, to prepare an environmental impact statement for the proposed construction of mine shaft number 4.
Is there a second to that, Anna Kellis? Let's open it for discussion. Carol, do you want to speak
first? I can open it. So I put this on the agenda after the PDEC meeting because I had some new information that I learned about following that meeting that we didn't have at the time that we considered it in committee. It had come to my attention that others of our constituents and officials had asked the DEC to extend the comment period and or to require an impact statement. Barbara Lifton asked for a 90-day comment period back on September 30th. I don't think any of us were aware that there had been any kind of notice back on September 30th. She had sent that in, and we didn't have the privilege of seeing her request. The town of Ulysses, it was Kathy Zoller who wrote a letter to the DEC with copies to others.
Zoller lives in Dryden.
Nancy Zoller.
Sorry, Nancy I am Zaylor. Sorry. Oh. Nancy's, yes, here it is. Nancy B. Zoller, deputy supervisor of the, I get my Zoellers mixed up, of the town of Ulysses. It is in your packets. Actually, all of these I put. The Barbara Lifton letter is on packet page 48. Thank you for the correction, Martha. The EMC, not the resolution that they forwarded to us, but their letter to the DEC is on packet page 49, and the Town of Ulysses letter to the DEC is on packet page 53. It came to my attention, so that came to my attention. It came to my attention that the Cayuga Lake Watershed Network hadn't received what they usually would receive related to projects that have potential impact to the lake, which would be an announcement sent to their offices that there's a project that's being considered. The notice of the fact that there was a comment period was really narrowly posted,
by the DEC. And now we see that maybe just the knowledge that somebody was watching, that this was on our agenda for tonight, because these things back on September 30th didn't, and October 3rd didn't have the effect of extending the comment period, of achieving an EIS. So now that there's been additional public attention to this, we're seeing the DEC say, okay, maybe there does need to be an additional comment period. So what we do and whether we watch does have an effect. That's why I put it on the agenda to bring to your attention here. I want to talk secondly about CECRA and what it does and doesn't do. The State Environmental Quality Review Act does not say you need to change a project, you need to end a project. What it says is that if a project has potential, may have potential impact, that the full light of day should be brought to the information. Having then reviewed and allowing the public to look at that information, ask questions, if the lead agency then decides, okay, we have questions, then appropriate action can be taken. That's all it does. And I'll point your attention to an environmental assessment form, a short form, that we have in our packets tonight. Happens to be for the Heisey Road Finger Lakes Land Trust purchase. It's on packet page 38. And you'll see there the kinds of questions that a reviewer, in this case the lead agency would be the DEC, when answering the questions, the reviewer should be guided by the concept, have my responses been reasonable considering the scale and context of the proposed action? So reading that, you check off one of two boxes. No, there's no impact, no potential impact, or it's such a small impact that we're just not going to worry about it. And the other is a box that says moderate to large impact may occur. And there are 11 points a reviewer should consider. Number two, will it change the use or intensity of use of land? Number seven, was there any potential, may occur, any proposed impact, any potential impact on a public or private water supply or water treatment facility? Salty water, brine, a saltier lake, could that have an impact? I don't know. Number nine, is there any potential impact to natural resources, e.g. wetlands, water bodies, groundwater, air quality, flora or fauna? And number 11, will the proposed action create a hazard to environmental resource or public health? Human health. In a case like this, maybe the question that they'd look at would be, could methane leakage happen along the outside of the mine shaft, as we heard about in other situations, and would workers potentially be in any danger? Should any one of those boxes be checked, you go on to the next page, on packet page 39, we've got the form. In which case, you either explain it below in much greater detail, as to the probability of occurring, duration, irreversibility, geographic scope, magnitude, those kinds of questions. That's what we're dealing with. It's not, in any case, even should there be a full environmental impact statement, it is not saying the project wouldn't happen. Thirdly, I'll just say that I was called by reporters today, who looked to me and really wanted to know, am I in any way, by bringing this forward, saying that Cargill is not a good citizen of our community, or is in itself, do I have knowledge that there's anything environmentally dangerous about the way in which Cargill operates? And I said in no uncertain terms that no, absolutely not. That what I am looking to have us do is the kind of things that I've been talking about here. just bring transparency, have the DEC conduct and engage in the kind of process that we ask. We ask the corner grocery store to engage in this kind of process. Should there be any questions about potential impact, what, I don't know, former leaks of oil under the ground? I know this one situation downtown where there had to be an extensive environmental impact study done. The kind of thing we heard about from Maplewood that they're asked to do with housing developers, Black Oak. Just about every project, let's just level the playing field. There's just no reason that a $45 million project next to our lake, industrial scale project, shouldn't be subject to the same rules as everybody else and in terms of environmental review. So that's why I brought this forward, and I hope that you will consider this. I'll say one last point. The company's studies would look at the safety and over the period of time that they'll be in operation is the assumption that the public would go in with. Of course they're interested in having it be safe.
Sorry.
My time. Silencing electronic devices
of course they
for legislators as well. Carol, please continue.
And I trust that that's true. That's 20 to 50 years from what I understand. And what we need to look at is what might happen in the 50 years or 100 years or further after that. That's the kind of thing we're responsible for as a public body. And so for all of those reasons, I hope that you'll join me in, now that we've been successful in having the DEC realize that due diligence and proper notice was not done sufficiently to open, to close this discussion entirely, join me in asking the DEC to require a full environmental impact statement.
I have Dan, Jim, and then Anna. Dan, and then Julie and Peter. I got a lot of people. All right, let's go with Dan.
Thank you, Mike. I've been thinking about this issue a lot. I think it's a really interesting issue, and it's obviously generated a lot of community discussion, and that's generally a good thing. I wanted to take a minute to acknowledge some of the major players in this issue. First is the Environmental Management Council, which is the volunteer group that gives environmental advice to the county legislature. And they do an excellent job of gathering information about a lot of environmental issues that are going on in our county and in our region, and trying to make that information available and educate people, and also to ask a lot of questions. And that is their job, and that's what they've done in this case. They've asked a lot of questions. There's the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee that also took a look at this issue and heard from a lot of people, read a lot of material, educated themselves, and made a decision. It was a split decision, but that's fine. That they did what they needed to do in this process and made their recommendation about what they thought should happen. There's the Industrial Development Agency that was looking at a related question. And the same thing, they spent a lot of time listening to the public and listening to various people give input about what they thought should happen. They went through their process. They made their decision. They did what they were supposed to do. Then there's Cargill. And the more I learn about Cargill, the more I feel like they are a really good corporate neighbor and that we are lucky to have them in this county. They provide a lot of jobs. They're well-paid jobs. They're providing material that we use locally and all over the state that's really important to us, and they give it to us at a better rate than we can get elsewhere. They, as far as I can tell, they have an excellent safety record, an excellent environmental record, and I think we're really lucky to have them here. Having said all that, I am going to vote in favor of this resolution. We've been hearing concerns and questions from the public, and basically the way I interpret this resolution is that we are asking the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, to apply the strictest, the highest level of environmental scrutiny that they're allowed to. and I think that that's appropriate given that there's questions that people are raising. I think the county legislature, that one of our best functions that we do is try to answer questions, try to make sure that all questions are answered. That's a really good role for us. And so I'm going to vote for this, which is basically saying to the DEC, please reconsider your decision and consider applying the highest level of environmental scrutiny to this project. Personally, I hope the project occurs. I hope it occurs in a safe way, an environmentally safe way, because it's providing a valuable service, an important resource to this county, and it'll be good for the county, it'll be good for Cargill, it'll be good for everyone, and that's my hope on what happens.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. It occurred to me during the presentation by Professor Dennis that he made a statement that Cargill may have been operating illegally somehow because of some land issues. And I kind of like that question answered, and we have the Cargill rep in the audience, and if that can happen, I would love for him, Rob, to come to the microphone and at least address that one particular thing that was said.
Are you prepared to respond to that?
Yes, sir.
Could you come to the microphone?
And the reason I ask that is that I look around the room when people are talking, and I see what their reaction is, and I saw what his reaction was, and it looked like to me he might want to say something. And so here he is.
Please use the mic. I think so.
Again, thank you.
Go ahead and take it out.
Okay. So again, thank you. So obviously, again, there's a lot of passion in the room. Again, I want to make sure everyone understands we all have the same goals. Right. We want to be good stewards. We've been trying to be good stewards. I think there are a couple things I'll start with as far as a clarification. In spite of the lack of whatever law requirements are out there, Cargill continues to do the right thing because it's just simply that, the right thing. All the catastrophes that have been mentioned and neighbors, those are a constant reminder of what can go wrong and the reasons of why to do your diligence, which is why we base all of the consultants that we've dealt with. They consider our mine stability program to be world class, and we continue to do that every single year to make sure that we're not. And again, I can assure you that the DEC comes by the mine once a year, every summer, to meet with us to do a full review of the report that was submitted at that time, and they do go underground and inspect the mine every single year. Okay? We spent around $3.5 million in preparation of the full environmental impact. So I understand where people think that, you know, that we by no stretch or imagination got a free pass or got off light. We spent $3.5 million and spent 3 years preparing for the full long range, the long form of the environmental assessment form. Okay. From what I understand from secret requirements, that changed October 7th of 2013, where the EAF became the default form you start with, and then basis the findings of the lead agency. Then they decide whether or not an EAS is required. So again, we're following the process that's established by regulations and law. Okay, this is not something we're trying to deceive anybody by.
Excuse me, Jim, is this answering the question that you asked?
Yeah.
Okay. And as far as the segregation situation, again, there's never been, and we still do not know to this point today, if Cargill is going to support a shaft. One of the questions, as I've met numerous times or had discussions with Dr. John Warren, he'd ask the questions, why do you not mine underneath of the town or underneath of the shorelines? Well, we spent numerous years trying to get the property rights to mine to where the shaft location would be. I can tell you right now that is a painful argument, and I want to remind everybody that in order for us to mine underneath the shore means we have to negotiate a mineral lease agreement with every single landowner. It doesn't matter if they own a quarter acre or 100 acres, and that is a extremely difficult process to go through. Okay? I'll also say what weighs more, a cubic foot of rock or a cubic foot of water? Doesn't matter. Cubic foot of rock does. There's less stresses under the lake. It's better conditions. There's been no intention here to segregate and try to work around a system. It's been all part of it. Cargill's been trying to be transparent for 4 years. 4 years ago, we reached out to the neighbors. We reached out to the town of Lansing. We reached out to.
We really wanted you to answer the question
right.
That was specifically asked.
So the segmentation part is and the legal stuff. Again, I have no idea that where that's coming from. As far as we're concerned, there has been no segmentation stuff. There's been a process that we've been trying to work through as far as the approval process of previous permits. So I whether or not it's legal or not legal or unfounded, that part is a mystery to me, to be quite honest with
you. That's fine. I think what my concern was that DEC had never been down the mine, and you answered that question pretty clearly. Let me just continue that I am not going to support this resolution. I believe that Cargill has done the due diligence. I've said this many times in about three or four different meetings. They've done what they have to do, and just from a common sense point of view, and it's been said many times in many meetings, they're a $2.3 billion corporation, and that makes it like, ooh, they're a very rich corporation. Even a $2.3 billion corporation doesn't want to spend $45 million and put a hole in the lake so that they can drown their mine. I mean, that makes no sense to me. And I believe they've done what they needed to do to get their permit, and I'm hoping they can get it done.
Anna Kellis.
No, you may not. I don't have a question for you.
Thank you. Anna Kellis, please.
If there is information that would be helpful for us as we consider this resolution, I personally would love to hear those three sentences. So is that okay with everyone? I would love to hear. I'm asking you to come up, because if it's information
Dr.
that would
Dennis,
help me make
be
a decision.
Glad to have him answer.
Thank you. These three sentences were in an internal DEC memo.
Click the button on there.
I need to get the mic on there.
Perfect. This is an internal DEC memo from Chief Administrative Law Judge McClymans and his associate Administrative Law Judge Susan J. Dubois to Louis A. Alexander, Assistant DEC Commissioner. This is back in 2002 regarding a FOIL request. And the three sentences read as follows. Among the disagreements was Cargill's contention that DEC lacks statutory or regulatory authority to regulate Cargill's underground mining operations. Sentence number two. While recognizing the disagreement and reserving their respective rights, DEC staff and Cargill agreed to a stipulation under which Cargill would submit information to DEC. Among other provisions of the stipulation, Cargill agreed to pay certain costs for a mining engineer consultant to assist DE staff in review of the proposed underground mining design for potential impacts on public health and safety, natural resources, and environment. So over 46 years, DEC has not wanted DEC to regulate underground mining. If that's changed today, I would be very happy. But I don't know that change has yet to occur.
Thank you. Anna, do you want to finish?
Yeah, I for me, that's just information. And the more information right now and the more transparent, I think the better. So I appreciate that information. We obviously have a decision to make that all of that is important. For me and my consideration, I keep going back to, the ground working on a geologic timescale and humans working on human timescale. And so I first want to say that I very much appreciated, Dan's, your comments. I also, in my evaluation, appreciate everything that Cargill is doing. And I also want to make the distinction. I think sometimes we all feel like environmentalists are on one extreme and industry is on the other extreme. And I'm just not hearing that here. So I would really like to make that point. I've consistently not been hearing that. And the question for me keeps coming up of why not do an EIS? And what would be the harm, really, in doing our absolute, utter due diligence for something that will be around on a geologic timescale? It seems just common sense to me to make sure and use all the tools that we have to make sure that it's the safest it could possibly be. And if in that period they find that they feel comfortable and we all feel comfortable with the risk, then we can move forward. And I certainly hope that it comes to the point where everyone does feel comfortable and that can happen. And I want to say two things that really stuck out to me in public comment. One was my own evaluation of the Maplewood project. It was an exceptional experience watching a company that doesn't actually necessarily always have the best public record as engaging the public take time and effort to make sure that they were exceptionally transparent, that they responded to the public's concerns, and I think ultimately created a very good project in collaboration. It was teamwork. It was so impressive. So doing that here instead of an adversarial atmosphere just seems like a smart idea. So I personally would really like to see that. And I had another thought, but I'll let that go because I want to make sure this continues forward.
Dooley, Peter, Martha.
The Cargill salt mining operation has been in part of community discussion early on with the IDA being asked for a sales tax exemption. That's not what we're talking about tonight. That's not what the EMC is focused on at all, and I think there may have been some misapprehension about that. The EMC did what it tries to do all the time, which is educate itself, and with the help of John Dennis's son's foundation, the EMC was able to benefit from, I can't remember his name, the Dr. Warren's expertise. Dr. Warren's work is well known by the geologists, I'm sure, that Cargill uses. Dr. Warren's work is known by Bill Capel, who has been locally on the USGS in Ithaca. And Dr. Warren's technical review was not, in my view, aimed at stopping this project. He worries about things being as safe as possible, and he works with corporations worldwide. And I don't think that Cargill resents Dr. Warren's input. I hope they will make use of it. That's my understanding of its intent, anyway. With respect to DEC's ability to make use of it, that's more problematic because, as we all have known for a number of years, the staffing of DEC has decreased over time. Our own regional office, which is in Cortland, does not have a mining person on its staff. They defer to the next region over, Region 8. They use their mining expert. And DEC has various people with various expertise in Albany. But that doesn't make it easy for local people who want to inform themselves about this project to become informed. I went over to the DEC offices with another member of the EMC. I was confronted with this 18-inch stack of paper, not organized in any particular way, and we just were able to go through it at our own speed and see what we could learn in the couple of hours we had to spend there. I came away feeling that the RESPEC report that is the one that summarizes the core hole that was drilled, I think Mr. Wilsinski said, within 50 feet of where the mine shaft will be. I came away feeling that that had problems. I would love to see them addressed. I think that some of what Dr. Warren commented on had to do with the RESPECT, if I'm saying it correctly, report in that stack of papers. So the EMC, in my opinion, is not opposed to this project. It wants to do what it always wants to do, which is look out for our environment and the future of our land around here and the generations to come. If I sound like a Native American, that's rubbed off a little bit with the activity in North Dakota. I do not see anything wrong at all or threatening by this resolution that Carol submitted. It asks DEC to do what it would be good if DEC had done on its own motion, which is to require a full EIS, where all of the material, all of the relevant information is put together and the public gets to look at it and either feel reassured or worried, whatever. And it's useful for the applicant to have that kind of document to refer to. The somewhat questionable authority of DEC underground in this state remains a mystery to me. I don't think it's ever been settled satisfactorily. For a long time, DEC's focus was on fish and animals, birds. It wasn't on the environment. It has changed its focus significantly in recent decades. And in particular now, it needs to focus a lot on energy. And the energy analysis for this particular project, greenhouse gas emissions in particular, was not something that was carefully done over the last 4 years of due diligence, as far as I could tell from what I found in the DEC offices in Cortland. What I expected to be able to do would be to go to Lansing, which is the home of the project, the town of Lansing. Cargill did notify the town of its various project pieces, and the town of Lansing was happy to receive whatever documents got there, but they never engaged in this process at all. They left it all in DEC's hands. When we tried to see if we could see the documents at the town of Lansing, they're not there. I don't know what happened to them. I assume Cargill sent them. I don't know what happened to them, but in the town of Lansing, there is very little paper that one can look at. So one is reliant on the Fisher Avenue location for DEC, and that's hard for us to get to. I think the idea that there could be an EIS and it could be put in our county library and all of us could have easy access to it seems ideal to me. I've gone on too long, Mike. I support this resolution. I think it can only lead to better things. I don't think it will stop this project at all. We all want to see Cargill safe and successful.
Let me take a time check at this point. We are scheduled to have a public hearing at 7 o'clock. We've got about 12 minutes. I kind of hate to keep the folks in the audience waiting on this, so I'd kind of like to ask folks to try to make their remarks brief and see if we can get this to a vote. Peter Stein.
I'll try to be as brief as I can. I hate these discussions that come up. Discussions when we are sitting around making decisions that we have no real, in ourselves, any real understanding of what the risks are, okay? That's a very difficult position. And what are you going to do about that? I mean, you say, well, one way of saying is let's look at the worst possible thing that can happen and then use that as the criterion. Well, I was sitting and listening, and the worst possible thing that can happen is that the lake that gets destroyed and there's no more Cayuga Lake. Now, if that's a possibility, I'm going to vote against this. But I must have faith that if that, I mean, I'm telling you, that's not zero possibility, okay? Almost anything can happen in this world. But if I'm going to try to make a decision as to whether or not that passes the limit of so impossible that I can forget about it, I'm in no position to make that decision because I know zero about the technology here. So who do I rely on? Do I rely on this person that says it or that person that says it? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if I have to rely on somebody, it's the DEC. The DEC says that it's been done well enough, essentially. Now, the thing that upset me most, that affected me most, and all of the people that spoke, was the Black Oak person that spoke, who said, why did we have to wait for 2.5 years to make our windmills when there was no huge problem, okay? No possibility. Their windmills weren't going to make the lake fall apart. But they did have to wait 2.5 years in order to do that. Now, I happen to think that that was the mistake, not this one. I mean, what happened with Black Oak is that there were a few people who could indeed have been very much affected by too much noise or whatever it is they were concerned. And so that's why it took them 2.5 years to get to that. But we can't spend 2.5 years or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years to reducing the possibility of a major disaster. Somebody has to make a decision as to, is this okay or is this not okay? And I'm willing to go with the Environmental Protection Agency. So I'll vote no, okay?
Martha Roberts.
Thank you. I want to ask, just step back, everybody say, well, so what is it we want? And I think we could say we all want. We want DEC to pay attention to this information. I sure can't judge it. I don't think there are any geologists here who can judge it. So I called Joe Dugalensky at DEC, and even before the PDEC meeting, he left a message, which I didn't get till after, saying that, and this was after that comment period was closed. He said, absolutely, people can send more information, and we will consider it. Scott Doyle from the Planning Department came to PDEC and made the same point, that he was assured that new information would be looked at by the DEC, even though the comment period had passed. So I was impressed. I thought, oh, maybe those comment periods, those deadlines don't really mean so much. So then I subsequently had a conversation with Mr. Dugalensky, and among other things, he said that that the DEC could modify a neg deck, and it sounded like, in fact, the methane issue was a new one that Commissioner Segos had asked, maybe since Cargill started this process, had asked that escaping methane be looked at. So that sounded like something that, in fact, was going to be looked at. He told me he listed all the people who are actually reviewing John Dennis's information and whatever else they've gotten in the meantime. You know, reams of geologists and professionals, it's going to be reviewed by DEC. It's going to be reviewed again by Cargill for their response. It's going to then DEC local makes a determination, then it goes to Albany. So the information that has been presented here is, I hope, in their hands. It's kind of a waste of time to send it to us. You should be talking to them. So I trust that everybody's earnest research and passionate arguments are already in the right hands, because ours aren't the right hands. So you've been heard. They're looking at all of this right now, even though there was a comment period. The comment period has been extended, and despite the deadlines, they've got it, and they're looking at it. So I think we're done, and I feel that. So then the question is, why not pass this anyway? Because, remember the story about the boy who cried wolf? I'm really sorry, guys, but if we pitch a fit even when we win, then we lose all credibility for when we really have an issue that nobody's paying attention to. They are paying attention to this. They're looking at it. I think we should proclaim victory, and move on to the next thing. So I'm going to vote against this.
Rich John.
I'm certainly happy to hear that the 30-day additional period has been added. And if there is issues, I think we should be continuing to examine and look at them. But at this point, it seems like they are listening. Martha sort of said it, and I wanted to echo what the comments Peter made as well. But I think I'm going to be voting against the resolution today. But certainly, if it was brought back in 30 days, if a serious issue remains, I think it would be fair for our legislature to consider the issue then.
Anna, you wanted one other chance, and then I'd like to get to a vote.
Yeah, I just the comment that I did remember, and I'm glad that Peter did bring it up, but I came to the exact opposite conclusion from that, which is that we had Black Oak Wind Farm, and they went through a rigorous process. And I think that that was the right thing to do, and I think that the point that Carol brought up at the beginning of this entire discussion, which is it's outlined that if there may be any possible harm, that it then extends to a larger evaluation. And so, you know, people are already set in their minds, I am sure, but I do just want it to be in public record that I think that I personally would like to err on the side of caution, given the risk of impact, if there is, as was pointed out in the various studies, where the best of intentions were laid out, and the third-party people. The fact that there have been issues that have been identified, particularly the methane, for example, I think is an issue that raises the point that even after their evaluation, there's some things that they missed. I would say that the significant difference between their looking at it versus doing a formal EIS is that in a formal EIS, they craft a report, and that report is then evaluated. It is given to the public. There is transparency that is not necessarily the case when they're simply looking at it. So I would say that it is not the same. I would also like to just make sure that we are careful with our language. I still have not heard anyone pitching a fit. I really don't see that there is tremendous opposition between groups right now. There's simply a request for all the possible information to be out there. So I'd just like to request that we all honor that.
All right, folks, let's get to a vote on this.
Can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, we can have a roll call.
But before we do that, can I just ask? People waiting for a hearing.
You have a question, Carol?
The EMC had brought this to us. I just think it's only fair to ask them if they have anything additional they'd like us to hear. Given the new information about the comment period, whether they want to see us put this off or not.
Can we just Brian, do you want to respond to that? You have to go to the microphone.
We want the environmental law apply equally to everyone. Small business, agriculture, smaller businesses, and other organizations do environmental impact statements. We see no reason why we should exempt them from this process. And it'll provide information to us. It's not to shut it down, to make it a better project, like we make Maplewood a better project. So,
I don't think the microphone is on.
Okay. I just don't see that this is a large ask. I don't think we're asking for very much. We're asking that they do things that everybody else does. And that's it. I have nothing more than that to say. I appreciate the reception that I have received here and the thoughtful comments that people have made. And I just let it go forward and we'll see what happens.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Brian. Let's proceed with the roll call vote on Resolution M, the member-filed resolution from Carol Chalk.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Mr. John?
No.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
No. Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
6 ayes, 8 noes.
Resolution fails. All right, at this point, we're going to... you want a break or you want to go right into the public hearing? We'll go right into the public hearing. We have a public hearing tonight. It starts at 7 o'clock. We're right on the dot. Which is the review of the tentative 2017 Tompkins County budget and the 2017-21 Tompkins County capital program. And there are folks here to speak. We'd like to have them speak. Please, we don't have a sign-up list, but please go to the microphone. And we don't have a strict three-minute time limit, but that's a pretty good amount of time to think about. So is someone here who would like to speak on the budget? Are we going to have a budget hearing with no one speaking about the budget tonight?
Can we keep the hearing open in case anybody comes in?
We can do that. All right, last call. Anyone want here to speak on the budget? I've been asked not to close it in case somebody else comes in. But at this point, apparently, we don't have any speakers. All right, thank you. Let's move on. Who else is here and needs something done? I think, Brian, you're on, and also Jay, you're on the consent agenda things. Why don't we take the consent agenda? I have to ask first, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim, I think you have one to add.
Yes, I do. It is, oh man, I had it here. It's authorizing the county administrator to sign a stipulation of settlement resolving OMIG, Office of New York State Medicaid Inspector General audit of County Mental Health Clinic for the years 2004 through 2007.
Is there a second to add that to the agenda?
And we need 10 votes to get that on. I'm hoping you can do it.
All in favor of, or are there any other resolutions to be added to or withdrawn? All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. That appears to be unanimous.
Chair?
All right, that's added.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Dan.
I just want to point out that the resolution that Jay is waiting for is not on consent agenda, so if we want
to
get him
we'll
through.
We'll do the consent, and then I'll come to that one. Okay. How's that?
Yep.
Ed's waiting, too. Ed's waiting for.
Ed's way in the back. All right, let's take the appointments from the advisory boards to the Ithaca Downtown Alliance, Anna Kellis, to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Mary Kate Wheeler. And we have the resolutions on consent. If you want it off, just say so. Resolution A, budget adjustments out of the Sheriff's Office. That's ID 6617. Resolution B, authorizing, or B is off, out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Resolution C, award of fall 2016 community celebration grants.
You've got revisions in packets? There are revisions?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, we have a revised.
So that's ID 6504. Resolution D, award of fall 2016 tourism project grant, ID 6505. From the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, resolution E, award of Fall 2016 New Tourism Initiative Grants. That's ID 6506. Resolution F, award of Fall 2016 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. That's ID 6507. Resolution G, approval of 2016 Multi-Year Tourism Capital Grants, ID 6552. Resolution H, authorization to contract with the United Way of Tompkins County for 2016 Online Tourism Grant Management Services. That's ID 6666. And out of the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution I, acceptance of grants from the Community Foundation and the Ithaca Board of Realtors in support of 2016 Housing Summit. That's ID 6633. May I have a motion on the consent agenda? Glenn, seconded by Peter. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Yes.
Point of information, are we voting on the revisions that Dooley offered or the originals?
The revisions. Kathy says it's the revisions. Okay. Ready to vote again? All in favor? Those opposed? That's unanimous. So, Dan, let's go to your resolution, please. Resolution J.
Excuse me, Mike. Mike, I think the photographer just came in for the budget hearing, I'm going to guess.
Yes. We so far have not had anyone who wishes to speak at the hearing.
Okay.
If you didn't come to speak, did you, or did you?
No, I came to film that part. Yeah.
All right. We've left the hearing open for a while.
We can film you speaking.
We've left the hearing open in recess for a while in case someone does come in. We were glad to hear from them, but at this point we don't have anyone to speak.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Resolution J, Dan.
Thank you. I'd like to move Resolution J, adoption of local law of 2016, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law Section 467J, restricted sale price exemption for housing trust houses.
There's a second by Dooley. Can you just give us a brief synopsis of what that is for the people at home?
Jay, would you be willing to come up to the microphone, please? Thank you.
Jay Franklin is our Director of Assessment.
Thanks. This exemption just allows for properties that are subject to a community housing trust and have a restriction on what they can resell their improvement for me to be able to provide an exemption for the difference between what the fair market value of the property would be absent any restriction and what their maximum resale value is according to the restrictions that they have.
Questions, Martha?
Well, I really am thrilled that this got through the legislature, was signed by the governor, and I want to publicly thank Barbara Lifton and Thomas. Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton and Senator Tom O'Mara for helping to push it through their respective houses, and Paul Mazzarella from INHS for bringing this to our attention, because we really want to make sure that we make that homes are meant and invested in as affordable actually can be affordable. And this is a great solution to a problem that Jay brought to us. Actually, I heard J.R. Claiborne talking about it first. Probably a year or so ago, that people could get into these homes, but once you layer on the property taxes for the full value that they couldn't even recognize, then they were at that edge where they couldn't afford the house after all. So this is really an important step, and I appreciate everybody working towards that solution.
Dooley?
Jay, as I read the short, raw language, it sounds as though the holder of this property, the owner of this property, has to reapply every year. Is that right?
According to the law, it does. It's more that they need to certify to me what the maximum resale value is of their property.
So you would be designing a form that you would give them to use every year? How would that work?
It's actually the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance The form is in their legal department, and it's a very simple form. It's here's my name, here's my address, here's my parcel, and I'm going to supply you with documentation of what my maximum resale value is.
Will you be reminding each one each year to do this?
I'm working with INHS right now to make sure that everybody applies in a timely fashion. If they don't apply as of taxable status date, they won't be kicked out of the system. It's once you're a land trust property, you're always going to be a land trust property. So the worst that's going to happen is that their maximum resale value will go up that 2%. But with INHS's help, I don't think any of these 44 properties currently are going to fall through the cracks and would lose their exemption. That's just not going to happen.
Thanks.
Carol.
If I remember correctly from committee, it's going to be a question for Jonathan. While it is the property, I think I have to recuse myself from this vote. It's the property owners and not Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services that benefits financially from our enactment of this, because my husband is the one who's been here talking to us about it. That presents an appearance of a conflict of interest. Mr. Jonathan, is that?
I do not believe that you have a conflict of interest, and I believe that you can vote on it.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, then I can ask my question of Jay. Thank you. I will vote on this, and I'm pleased to be able to, because I think that, Martha's already said what I think as well, that if you can't actually gain the advantage from the assessed value, you shouldn't have to pay the taxes on it. Jay, do people who participate in our other exempt programs, the various other kinds of property tax exemptions, have to reapply each year?
It really depends on what type of real property tax exemption it is. Applicants such as veterans, your status as a veteran doesn't change from one year to the next. Applicants such as seniors, their income may change from one year to the next, so they would have to reapply. Agricultural land exemptions have to apply each year because you're further committing your land to ag production, and you're also certifying that the ag land was productive in the previous year. So the reapplication process for this is simply to certify what their maximum resale value is, which will change from one year to the next.
So if the if the housing trust nature of these properties can't change over time, my understanding is that once it's in the housing trust, it doesn't get undone. That's the purpose of the trust, is for the properties to stay in them in perpetuity, so that the first owner who got assisted can't turn around and realize a profit that then the next owner who might have the same kind of need doesn't get to realize. Could we devise a process by which the one organization, or if there are others in the future, in this case INHS, were to certify which properties are still in the trust, that could suffice rather than each? That seems to be undue hardship on this particular population being asked to reapply each year when the nature of the property doesn't change.
The short answer is no, because it's in the real property tax law. But the longer answer is their circumstances will change. The same with the low-income senior exemption. Once you turn 65, you're only going to get older. So that part isn't going to change, but your income may change, which would cause a change in that exemption. So your maximum resale value will change from one year to the next. So that's why this application needs to be done. I can say with 99.99% certainty, once you're in this program, you're not going to lose your exemption, at least for the next 19 years. Well, hopefully I'm still director.
Anna?
But who's counting?
Just a quick question. There's nothing that requires that a unit or a house stays in this system at all. I mean, once if someone wants to sell and move away, and there's no restriction on who they sell it to, so there's no guarantee it's going to stay in. Right? I am understanding that properly. There's no requirements on or contracts or to try and keep it into an affordable housing bracket.
No, that's the whole reason behind this exemption is there are restrictions on who they can sell it to and what price they can sell it for.
That was the one piece I wasn't understanding, and I assumed that there would be, and I just missed it, so thank you.
All right. Can we proceed to a vote on the local law? I'm going to ask for a roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Definitely yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. That passes. Okay, thank you. Let's go on to Resolution B got pulled. I think Brian's here for that. Could we go to Public Safety? Peter Stein, would you move Resolution B, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'd move Resolution B.
Resolution B is authorizing a contract with Black Creek Integrated Systems to provide and install a jail access and control system at the Tompkins County Public Safety Building. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Peter?
There's really no arguing about it. I mean, we have a BlackRock system, and they want to expand it, and that means that they're limited in who they can hire to do that expansion.
I think there was a Carol.
Yeah, I pulled it because I had a question about the system. Aligning these. I didn't understand from the memo. Where's Brian? Oh, thank you, Brian. Have we had both systems for a long time, or did we update one and didn't realize that it was now not going to align with the other? This didn't quite make sense to me.
Brian Robinson is our undersheriff.
Yes. We do have Black Creek, let's call them systems, the control. And if you could imagine, it's like the cockpit of an airplane. I mean, it's the actual console, which is what this capital project is. That was originally purchased from Black Creek. We also have a jail management system. That is Black Creek, video surveillance system, which links into Black Creek, inmate medical records, which link into Black Creek. So we cannot use another vendor for this project. It has to be, instead of a bid, it has to be a sole source. This is the only source that we can use for this capital project.
Okay, but at the time, now I understand. Okay, so then at the time that we signed in with Black Creek, I assume we bid the process, the contract back then? Were those open to bids?
I don't know. I wasn't around, and then I would imagine if it's an initial installation, then yes, we would have to go through the bid process. But once you agree on a vendor and you buy essentially other components to it, when it comes time to replace it, you have to use that same vendor because they're not compatible.
Right. Okay. So then I assume that then we'd have to upgrade all the other systems should we open this up to a bid and then somebody else.
The video system was part of a capital project from earlier this year, so that's already been updated. The medical records component is something new within the last couple of years. That's following state law that we have to have those medical records. So the components are kind of piecemeal, but this, the actual control center, has to be replaced. This is the one that opens and closes doors and pretty much controls the entire jail.
Okay. Well, I appreciate learning more. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I support this.
So, Carol, what got me thinking about this, Brian, thank you for those answers. Essentially, there was a key decision point that happened in the past when we decided to go with this system, and now essentially everything has to flow from that, correct? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Yep. It's either that or you buy this system and everything else that we already have.
So, from your perspective, the fact that I'm not hearing any complaints. You're feeling that this is serving your needs. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And do we have any sense? Are there competing systems? And you know, are we paying a whole lot more if we were to consider others? Or have you not done that shopping recently because you didn't need to?
We did not bid it because we couldn't. But my guess is that. Systems. This Black Creek system is almost universally used throughout New York State and beyond. Everyone uses this, and that's where we pull our jail statistics and right. And all that sort of stuff. And it's linked into COC. They look at the same stuff.
So I do recall about 2 years ago when we were beginning to talk about the jail and we're trying to understand the makeup of the population that we're in fact having problems getting statistics out of that, at least initially. Does my memory serve? Maybe Joe, you can do you remember the problems that initially we had? And
yeah, and I'm not sure. I don't think Will that it's a part of the hardware or the software. I think it's data entry, that when you're entering data really quickly about an inmate, sometimes you get things in the wrong box, sometimes you misspell. It's hard to kind of align all those things. Okay. So I think the system itself is just fine.
Okay. Final question. Any sense of time frame for this? I mean, we have this system. I'm obviously going to go for it. Are we talking an investment and a decision for the next 5-10 years? Or
The lifespan of these? Yeah. As far as the console itself, I believe it's original installation, which was whenever it was built.
80s.
Yeah.
All right. I've got Peter, then Martha.
Yeah. Very quickly, I've seen this before here. I've seen it with the 911 center, with the Spillman system, and a TCAT. I see a lot. They have a basic. System that's involved for the buses when all it started off doing was just counting fares and seeing where it goes, and they get more and more complicated and they can do more and more things, and so you keep adding to it, but if you want it you got to pay their price. There's no competitor for it because it's got to feed into the system you've already got. And I mean, I find it a little bit disturbing, but there's nothing much you can do about it, as near as I can tell. I mean, I suppose at one point someone will come out with ways that are enable you to hook something new into something old, but at the moment they don't exist.
Martha?
I'm pretty sure I remember Peter Meskel, when he was sheriff, asking that we replace this or saying, you're going to have to replace this soon. So how long ago was that? Long time ago.
I don't know. He was there for a while, so it could have been any time during that time.
Right. Leslie?
So I'm hoping that Peter is right, that someone someday will come out with something that will enable systems to talk to each other, because this makes me very uncomfortable. I don't like things that sound like one company and just has the monopoly, and it doesn't matter what we do. We have to keep going to that company. Perhaps this will happen at some point. I will not sure that I'll support this because my principles just feels wrong.
Okay, we're ready to vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. That carries. Martha, let's go ahead and do the planning resolutions, and maybe we can let...
You know, Mike, I'm sorry. You usually ask, does anybody want to change their vote?
I do that on a roll call.
You did that only on a roll call. Okay.
Do you want to be recorded?
Yeah, I would like to join Leslin in the...
If there's no objection, let's record you as a no.
Close to unanimous here. It's...
All right.
I'd rather see us look at what systems are out there.
Martha, could you take your resolutions K and L, please?
Yep, absolutely. Resolution K, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number L of 2016, appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection for the acquisition of the Heise Road property, Town of Danby, and its document 6630.
Is there a second? Carol? Discussion? Carol or Martha?
Yeah, this is a Finger Lakes Land Trust property, but it also has a involved the state, and it seems that this is really a great project. Where on the trails, was it the trails group? Come on, what's it called? Finger Lakes Trails? Okay. Finger Lakes Trails Conference. So it's a really one of those elegant partnerships that Finger Lakes Land Trust has brought to us. And our, so when we get to the next resolution, I think our part is very small in it, but this is one of those properties that is fits all the criteria for our capital reserve fund. So I hope we'll support
Martha,
it.
Martha, is there a wording change there?
I think it's only relevant for the next one. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm sure that Ed Morris would be happy to walk around and sign everybody's packet, page 37, because I know Dooley's going to ask.
Signed
copy is in Kathy's hand? Okay.
Julie's next.
Yes, I was just going to say that the copies still aren't signed. I support this project wholeheartedly. I'll vote against it because I don't have a signed copy.
She does.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? On the negative declaration, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Are any opposed? We have one opposed. Anyone want to change a vote, Carol?
We'll oppose.
Okay. All right, so that carries. Let's go to the next resolution, L.
Resolution L, appropriating, and there's a little bit of language change in the title and then on the back page. So I'm going to read what came out of the budget committee, right? Mm-hmm. Came out of the budget this afternoon. Appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection to support the acquisition of the Heise Road property. So instead of the word for, it's to support the acquisition.
Yeah.
In other words, we're not buying it ourselves. This is to support other people's acquisition of it.
And that language changes also in the title and whereas and someplace else.
Yeah, once it's seconded, I'll...
Okay, second.
Yeah, I've got it. So on the back of
it's
your...
On the back, okay.
So in line, on the back in line two, add by the Finger Lakes Land Trust. So it should say that we've recommended that the county legislature authorize $6,500 in funding from the Capital Reserve Fund to support the acquisition of the Heise Road property by the Finger Lakes Land Trust. Now, therefore, be it. And then on line 7, on that same page, That the funding is going to be a total of $6,500 be appropriated for the purpose of supporting the acquisition of the Heisey Road property instead of the word acquiring on line 7.
Okay.
So that's how it came out of budget this afternoon.
Anything else? We've got some hands up.
No, just for a second.
I'm sorry?
Just seconding.
You seconded it. Okay, that's fine. Carol?
So does this money still is going to go to for the survey?
Right.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. I wholeheartedly support this. It so happens that I lived not quite adjacent to, but quite close to this land for 11 years when I lived in Danby. And we used to go and walk up in this section of land. It's beautiful. It's quite close to state land, if not abutting the state land. And it, you know, it's going to be a strong addition to the land trust and to the public. So I'm glad that they found this one.
Our written vote. Yep. All those in favor, please raise up. Sorry, this is a short form roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Oh, no.
And that makes it a long form.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
There's one no.
Sorry, one no.
That passes. Dooley?
I ask that the minutes make clear that although I support the project, my no votes on those two resolutions are to indicate the absence of signatures on the copies of the forms that were in our agenda packet.
Okay, Mike Sigler.
Mike, I made an mistake earlier. I needed to pull resolutions C, D, E, F, G, and H off the agenda so that I could abstain from that vote.
I know you abstained in committee on that. Without objection, can we show him as an abstention on those resolutions? All right, we'll do that, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Anna?
I just wanted my vote. I was out of the room with the consent agenda that I'm in support of it.
Okay.
Mike,
all right.
Excuse me. Mike Sigler,
yes.
Why are you abstaining? I don't understand.
Because a lot of that is grant money that may go toward advertising, and seeing as I work for an advertising company.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Wait, can I another point of information? So does he need to abstain from all of them or just from the marketing and advertising resolution?
I advised him to abstain from all of them because it just came up moments before the meeting and I didn't have much chance to review it. I didn't want him to take any risk. The meeting that this came from was moments before this legislature meeting.
Okay. It would seem like the marketing and advertising grants are the ones that...
Right. There's money bleed. So.
At this point, I'm going to again turn to the audience and ask if there are any... Is there anyone here who wants to speak at the public hearing on the 2017 budget and capital plan? You got someone who wants to take your picture if you do.
I can
see no one. I'm going to close
wait,
the public
what
hearing.
Is he with?
Thank you.
And we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and do reports.
Can we just close the hearing?
On the whole, I think we've been doing a better job, certainly with our Tompkins County Council of Governments, where we're bringing in other municipalities with us to talk about common problems. A good example is the Municipal Court Task Force and the discussions about the possible coming together of services in the back office area that they want to continue to talk about, and the difficulties that some of the rural municipalities are having, particularly with ambulance services, emergency services, which that group is beginning to talk about. But intermunicipal cooperation means more than just our own municipalities in Tompkins County. It means other counties. It means across the state and region that we can work with them through NYSAC, our New York State Association of Counties, and others. And it matters because sometimes we think we're the leader in something, and we find out later that maybe we're not. Maybe we're further behind. And it's good to go to conferences and other things where you're talking to people that have county experience and sometimes get shot down or get set back a little bit. And then to come together again and be able to move forward on common issues, common ground. So I just wanted to talk, just as I just did for a minute, about intermunicipal cooperation. Keep it in our minds. And while we focus a lot on economic development in our county seat, it's really important that we look at issues that affect all of our towns and villages throughout the rural areas as well. Let's move on to reports from, first of all, our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. And I'm going to pick up on your theme of intergovernmental cooperation for the first couple of items in my report. I've been reporting frequently on the Municipal Courts Task Force. You know, it's run its course, and Ray presented a few weeks ago. I think the last time I reported, we were waiting for TCOG to actually accept and adopt the report, because it was really commissioned by TCOG. And that was really a precursor to doing some other things to begin implementation. And I did want to report that at its meeting last Thursday, TCOG did unanimously adopt that report and committed itself to trying to implement its findings. That does bring some of it back to us, because you recall a centerpiece item of that report is the idea of a consolidated DWI court, a DWI part. And that part would be a part of county court. And to be able to staff that part of county courts, the task force called for a third county court judge. We've had two forever. And they called for a third county court judge, not only to handle that DWI caseload, which is a lot, but also right now it seems that the existing two county court judges are pretty stressed. And so that will be something that we will need to talk to you about, whether that is something that we want to move forward with, asking the state for a third county court judge. They would pay for staff, and it wouldn't just be a judge, it would be staff. We pay for the real estate. That's the bargain that was made with the state back in the 80s. So it's something that we will need to take up pretty seriously and pretty quickly if we want this to be able to be considered as a part of the next budget cycle. So I just wanted to let you know that is progressing pretty well, and there will be that county court judge part to the discussion. The other item on municipal consolidation, we haven't talked about it for a while, it's the police consolidation study, which took a pause for a couple of months. We needed to reissue the RFP. We did. The responses are now back. A large committee is going to be pulled together to be able to look through those RFPs, the responses to the RFPs, and make a recommendation about who the search group feels is best equipped to undertake the study. Ultimately, that has to come back to this body for your approval. So the way the search process is set up right now, large committee, six cities, six county, one or two from the towns. Our group would include three legislators, Peter Stein, who chairs public safety, Jim Dennis from budget and personnel, Glenn Morey, who's the third county legislator. The remaining three would be Brian Robison, Paula Younger, and myself to be on that group. The city also has six. And then the chief of the Cayuga Heights Police Department, Jim Steinmetz, is on the group. And we're reaching out to have another town, actually a village representative, to join that group as well. So lots of process. That will be, again, picking up traction very soon, hopefully bring it back to this body sometime still in November to begin looking at the selection of a consultant to do that report. Won't be done until the springtime. The other couple of quick things, in fact, just one quick thing. The long-awaited reopening of all our parking lots will happen tomorrow. So this has been about a six-week exercise to totally reconstruct the parking lots, which haven't been touched, I don't think, for many, many years. So the last of that project should have finished today, so all the parking fields around our buildings downtown will reopen tomorrow. The only thing left on that, there will be three bike racks around that area. I think there are 24 bicycle slots altogether that can be handled. There's a shelter over those racks. So those will be the last elements of that project. And that's it.
Questions? Martha?
Thanks, Joe. On the court consolidation, or court expansion, I guess, if we have a third part, I forgot about the real estate part. So have we had taken any kind of look at what that would mean as far as space and where that might go?
At this point, no, we have not.
Because, of course, that's why we moved here, right, to make room for them over there.
Right.
Okay. So how do we go about that? But I mean, I'd really like us to move forward and send a letter like we talked about, or a resolution or whatever we need to do. But we ought to have a conversation about space.
Yeah, we do. And that's really a policy conversation in this body. I think the first step is to involve Arel. Arel has a good handle on existing space down there. I don't know if there's space. There may be some space left over when the clerk contracted, but I don't think there's enough for the four or so staff folks that we require. But it is a factor.
Thank you.
Carol?
My questions were partly answered as to whether they actually need another court room or whether it's only the staff space. And then when you said the agreement was made in the 80s, was that just for our county or across the state?
Across the state. That was the Court Facilities Act. At that time, the state agreed to pick up all the personnel costs, all the way down to the town and village level. Towns and villages pay for their own court staff. We don't. But that was the bargain. They picked up the personnel, we picked up the real estate, and it goes back to the mid-1980s. Carol, I don't, this is my sense, I don't think there's a need for additional courtroom space. It would really be office space for the judge and staff to the judge that we would need to look for.
Richard John.
Thank you.
I'm reminded of an old theater joke about how many musicians can you fit in an orchestra pit? And the answer is, how many can you pay? And if New York State is going to pay, this seems like an easy one. I think our able county administrator would find room. I support this. I think we just need to move forward on it.
Any other questions for Joe? Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you. Joe, at one point in the law enforcement consolidation process, for the public have input?
So that the public will have input when it comes to this body. The city has appointed someone from the community, you know the name of the organization, the police services group, the oversight group for
police board.
Yes. So there's an individual from that group who will be on this large search committee. My sense was that we would make sure that we have insights from the community by putting so many legislators on the group. So we've got half of our group from the legislature.
That's not necessarily true, but okay.
Yeah.
I know that's a big concern for community members. And let me just reiterate that one of the things that had been shared with us here at this public speak was community members having an opportunity to be a part of the sort of survey development, whatever it was, so that the questions, the things that matter to them get heard before it's a done deal. So I'm hoping that at some point before it's a done deal, that there will be input from community members and we'll have time to tweak, to change, to whatever it is. I don't know if it's a hearing. I don't know what it is. Document out for input, whatever it might be. But I just want to emphasize the importance of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been so long. We did take a time out on this. It's been so long. But you know that we have built into the process, the consultant's review process, opportunities for public input, a few. So it's not just going into the ivory tower, writing the report, or talking to so-called professionals in the field, that we've woven into the process opportunities for true public involvement, community involvement.
That'll be great, and I hope they'll be advertised well. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood, fresh from across the Atlantic.
I have just a brief update on our hydro project with Gravity out in Waterloo. One of the things which hydro projects sometimes get caught up with is trying to get interconnection approval or agreement with the utility. And fortunately, we've done that, and that's complete much quicker than I actually thought it would happen. So that's probably our last big hurdle before actually remote net metering. So we're awful close to doing that. And what we expect in sometime in the near future, we'll have some sort of get-together out there at the plant. Other than that, I have no report.
Questions for John? Thanks, Jonathan. Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
I have some brief comments tonight on our sales tax receipts for October. For September. If you turn to your red packet, you should have the printout of the sales tax distribution summary. There's three reports. This is a quarterly report. The first report is the September report. If you look to the middle of the spreadsheet, you'll see columns for September 2016. The next spreadsheet looks just like it, but it's third quarter 2016. So first we'll review the September activity, which shows that for just the month of September, we were up 0.48% compared to last year. And if you're looking again at that same spreadsheet for September, moving over to the right-hand year-to-date columns, you can see that the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $24,626,997 compared to $24,699,430. So that represents a decrease of $72,433, which means we're down 0.29%. My remarks in past months have shown how this has gone from 1.5% down to 1%, down to 0.8%, 0.5%. We're now around about 0.3% down year over year. So we are slowly catching up as we progress slowly through the year. If you look at that next spreadsheet for the third quarter results, you can see that the county's portion of tax sales distributions for the third quarter of 2016 was up 1.34%. That's right there in the middle of your spreadsheet when you see the percentage change. And that's very good for a third quarter for that. In fact, this is when I've gone back and looked through the record, and you can see that on the last report where I give you all the quarters for the last umpteen years. If you turn to the second page or last page of that report, I've updated to show that the third period, and if you look at the county-only share, $8,907,081, that represents our best third quarter ever. So that seems to show that we're beginning to pull out quite nicely, at least at this point during the year. It's also our second best of any quarter. So not only is it our best third quarter, it's the second best of any quarter that we've had before. Of course, the fourth quarter for 2014 was definitely the highest, and that still ranks as the all-time high. And That's pretty much all I really wanted to say on sales tax, but not in your packet tonight. I just thought I'd comment that we made the recent semi-annual mortgage tax payments to all the municipalities. My phone begins to ring every April and October for the extra sales tax, I mean the extra semi-annual mortgage tax checks that towns and villages get. And the reason they call is this only happens every 6 months, and they love to see that money come in. I can report to you that out of all the total payments that we distributed to the city, towns, and villages was $941,288. So that's about $1 million that just went out the door extra for the towns and villages. Unfortunately, that's about 11.7% down or below where we were last year at this time for that same six-month period. Some towns and villages show gains, and some towns and villages show decreases because of sales. The real estate sales obviously are not the same in any given area when you're comparing the different towns and villages. In a nutshell, there were gains for 8 of the municipalities, and there were decreases for 8 of the municipalities. So it was evenly split. I just thought I'd share that little extra piece of information along with the sales tax receipts tonight.
Questions? I've got Dan's hand and Martha.
So two shortish questions, I think. So I just want to understand, the amount the towns get back is proportional to the amount of home sales in that town. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And then my other question.
And then it gets split between the towns and villages based on assessed value, and we update that formula every year when Jay puts out the new assessed values. We have to recalculate all the fundamental equations behind the spreadsheet that divvies up the mortgage tax monies.
And then did you say that the overall amount of that was returned to the towns is lower than last year? Is that the same as saying there's been less real estate activity in that
Correct.
Same period?
Correct. Okay. For that 6 month period.
Okay. Thank you.
But you have to also understand that real estate activity can be tend to be fairly erratic. You know, you could have one sale in the city or something like that could really drive the numbers, spike the numbers way up or way down. And so I try to let the municipalities know by giving them a percent change up or down compared to the last year's period and also the most recent period, which was just 6 months ago, so that they can kind of get a feeling, you know, if they have like three or four really negative periods in a row, that may cause some concern for them. But if they see it go up and down, as I see it go up and down quite irregularly, there's really not that much cause for concern because real estate is what it is.
Thank you.
Somebody else had their hand, I thought. Martha.
Well, I'm looking at the spreadsheet with the sales tax, and I'm really interested. The city has for months been leading, and the towns in the county outside the city or towns and villages have been really dropping, and this one is like a complete reversal. So the city, for the month of September, the city is down almost 7%, and the towns are up almost 9%.
Seems like a real catch-up to me, the way the state may be sending us our money, because when I see that trend and then there's a catch-up like this where it's completely reversed of the last 8 months, it makes me question, you know.
So you don't think it's necessarily some kind of radical shift in 1 month?
Well, I do know that the state did change their method of distribution this past month, starting with the month of September, but it wasn't supposed to change drastically, shifting between the entities. What they've shifted to do differently is that we basically get two payments in each month, and we would get one payment and then a much larger payment later on, 10 or 12 days later. And what they've done now is they shifted so that the first payment is much higher. So we're actually getting our money a little bit sooner. But as far as the mix between the entities, that's not really explainable.
Thanks.
Okay. Rick, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's go to committees. The one that will never die, Charter Review Committee, Dooley Kiefer, Chair.
stopped meeting. I have no report.
Oh, I skipped down. But go ahead. Finish yours.
We have not been meeting. I have no report.
All right. That's the report. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna is the chair.
F&I has not met. Our next meeting will be Monday the 7th at 3:30 in these chambers.
Questions? Transportation Committee, similar report. We haven't met. We will meet again on November 9th. Questions? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you, Michael. We have a meeting scheduled November 21st, right, Michelle? And we'll be back to the regular thing. And if anyone has been worried, I do have to schedule a meeting with anybody who wants to come with the four directs. We have not finished that whole evaluation process, and I truly would like to get that done in 2016. So you'll be hearing from us. Other than that, I have no report except that we'll be voting on the budget on November 15th. And
Jim, you have one resolution, which you added.
And I do have one resolution. Sorry. It pays to, you have to pay attention. It's authorizing the county administrator to sign a stipulation of settlement resolving OMIG, Office of the New York State Medicaid Inspector General, audit of County Mental Health Clinic for years 2004 through 2007. And I gladly move this.
I have a second by Glenn Morey. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Jonathan, thank you very much for your work and everyone else, the statistician from the university, whoever was involved in this.
Thank you.
I have too many check marks on my agenda here. I got to go back to government operations. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Government Operations Committee will meet tomorrow, November 2nd, 3:30 in this room. We've got several interesting things on the agenda. We are going to continue discussion of the county's use of social media as used by the county, policy discussion. Another thing is that we're going to be taking a look at approving money for engineering study for possible Heritage Education Center. I believe several committees are going to be looking at this, and we're the first of several to look at it. And then we will also be starting and possibly voting on the issue of setting salaries for legislators for the years 2018 through 2021. So if you want to think about the future, starts tomorrow.
And fireworks?
Yeah, fireworks is scheduled for next July.
Questions for Dan? Okay, thanks, Dan. Martha Robertson, Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee report.
Thank you, Mike. We met on October 19th, and you've got business from us that you've already passed. I did want to just mention the Community Foundation and the Ithaca Board of Realtors also have supported the Housing Summit, so that was on consent. I just want to mention that. We had a very interesting report from Julia Maddock about the Advanced Manufacturing Training Study, and the Workforce Development Board is going to be moving forward on that. It seems that there's a real interest in working, you know, and trying to join with a few other counties, Tompkins, Tioga, and Cortland in particular, to develop some training programs. She also talked about the hospitality workforce and hotel recruitments. We sort of heard that there were problems with the Marriott trying to get hiring people for the new hotel. She said they actually are doing very well with hiring, about 50 to 70 people. I think 20% of them had been unemployed. 80% currently working, so that means there's a lot of churn, and that's kind of interesting that the Marriott is hiring away from other, I guess, lower paid positions, and so that may actually increase wages as through the market. She also talked briefly about people with disabilities. We don't think about them so much as a particular employment segment, but she said, and we usually think about the employment rate or about the unemployment rate in the 3, 4, 5, 6% range or whatever. She talked about the employment rate, which is 18% nationally, which means 82% of people with disabilities are not working. Now, obviously, some of those are unable to work, but many of them could. So they're adding staffing to be able to really focus on that issue at the one-stop center. One item about home ownership, because we had a small item on that. It was pointed out that when we talk about 80% of area median income, sort of subsidized housing is considered anything for below 80% area median income. So I said, well, how much is that? So if somebody's making, a single person making $41,000 in this county, that's 80% of area median income, which I'm going to say is probably a lot of our own staff probably then qualifies for subsidized housing. If you have a family of four, $58,000 is 80% of AMI. Just very briefly, Ed Marks gave us a report on the Airport Industrial Park Feasibility Study and the DOT Relocation Study. And we have handouts and all, and I wouldn't do it justice if I tried to summarize right now, but I can get those reports to anybody who's interested. And I guess those are the big items, as well as the Cargill resolution that we considered that day. So.
Questions for Martha?
Martha, Bill. Just say a little bit more about Ed's report on the airport.
Yes, wait a minute. By the way, we did also talk about the housing strategy that staff is starting to work with their steering committee on identifying the actual unit targets for the housing strategy. What should our annual targets be? And so we went through kind of their earliest draft of what that would be. The airport feasibility study, and I'm shuffling papers here.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but
yeah, sure you did. Well, they've got a sort of draft design of how the site north of the airport would look and how it would lay out, and it seems that there's definitely, this is partly. Are you talking about the DOT relocation?
Yeah, that was specifically what I was wondering.
Okay, that the DOT, it seems definitely could fit well into that site. And there are conversations going on with them about whether that would, what that would cost, what it would look like. And it's an interesting opportunity for us because if the DOT were to go there, not only that frees up really critical land on the waterfront, but that would help support infrastructure that would be brought into that site that could then serve future needs for other kinds of facilities. It's been discussed as a possible TCAT expansion site, for example. So that'd be a great way to kind of seed the development up there with the help of state funding.
Thank you. Anna?
I'm not remembering, so question for you, and maybe Will remembers, someone else remembers, but didn't he say something about the economics for other entities is not conducive for them moving up there at this time, and that potentially the DOT moving there is what he was hoping would stimulate, but without it, there was something about it being an anchor. Was that, am I missing, right, that was the case?
Yeah, I think that it seems that the site, that there's maybe not enough demand right now for other industrial uses. Jeff, you can help me out with, if you have other more detail on that. That it wasn't like there is a high demand right now to develop an industrial park and to build a building on spec, for example. But that there's that it really would make sense to try to move DOT forward and get this land started.
Dave.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, putting the DOT structure up there would allow us to build facilities such as roads, sewer, water, and clear certain areas so that we could further develop that area and make it more feasible to do so.
Is this something that the whole ledge would want to
yes,
see
please.
A presentation on? Okay, I'll ask.
Or at least I'd like to get a copy of it.
And our next meeting is November 16th, 3 o'clock right here.
Thank you, Martha. Let's go to the Jail Study Committee. Richard John is the chair.
The committee met, and in fact earlier today, considered proposals from two consultants, one in California, one in Rochester, and arrived at a decision to select a preferred consultant at this point. The Rochester-based consultant will be bringing that proposal to the full legislature, I believe, at the November 15th meeting, and the committee meets again on the 17th of November.
Questions? Thank you, Rich. Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. WDIC met on Wednesday the 26th. We spent the bulk of our meeting involved in dialogue with guests from the community who represented the LGBTQ community, just sort of getting a sense of what are some of the needs, what are some of the areas of concern that they feel county government can help support and be involved and making life in Tompkins County, the quality of life in Tompkins County for LGBTQ members, one that is high and well regarded. So we had a very good conversation, discussion with those community members, and left with just a few ideas, one being really looking for an opportunity that the county can partner with others to host an open forum for the community at large, businesses, and everyone, just sort of, you know, discuss some of the issues that are affecting the LGBTQ community here in Ithaca. We also went on to talk a little bit more about the climate survey. We're coming up very quickly on 2018, when it's the next time that we should be rolling out a survey of our employees again and getting a sense of what are some of the areas that we want to touch on. And the committee also got an update, because we had been overdue for that, not through anybody's fault, just on the focus groups that had occurred and the facilitators' notes and thoughts based on the focus groups, the areas that we should be focusing on as a county. If anyone is interested in an executive summary of those notes from the facilitators and their thoughts on the process, please let me know and we can try to make it available. But that was generally the crux of our meeting.
Questions? Thank you, Leslie.
You're welcome.
The old library committee, we are planning to have a meeting to ask the designated developers to update us on what's been happening. We know there's been some meetings with that group, with the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Commission, which is causing some changes in the plan. So we need to look at it and see whether it is still within the scope that we were looking for at the county level. At this point, we're trying to focus, we think, on November 18th at noon, but Kathy hasn't confirmed that with all the board members, all the committee members yet. But that's what we're going to try for.
When you
Can I ask on that one? So when you have a date, can you send that out to the rest of us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Anything else I can answer? Let's go to Public Safety Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
Yeah, we had a meeting about a week and a half ago, something like that. It was a lot of several routine items, but the one item that I have to report on is a lengthy discussion we had with the Director of Corrections about the difficulty that we have in hiring correction officers. And we spent a lot of time talking about that and thinking about different things that we could do. But in the end, I felt really sort of depressed by it because it just seemed that a job that once was a decent job for a person to make a career on is apparently no longer the case, and it's hard to find a particular reason why that's true. And it reminded me of what TCAT is going through, where I've been very much involved in that, where jobs that used to be a good job for someone to do, either driving a bus or repairing a bus, where, as near as I can tell, the relative amount of money that those things brought has not deteriorated, but nonetheless, it's very difficult to find people who are doing it. And I have no answer, okay? I find it very depressing. We hear a lot during this election campaign about the middle class and that the middle class has not kept up with whatever else it is. And I think these are real examples of what's going on. And I think it's a very serious problem. And I think what we have to do is think as hard as we can is what can we do to make this a more appealing job for someone to carry out. So I have nothing positive to report on that, but I find it a bit scary, okay, in both situations. So we meet again at the usual time next month.
Questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter. Back to Leslyn Mabine-Claiborne for the Health and Human Services Committee report.
Oh, well, you'd be happy to know I have no report tonight, as we have not met since this last legislature meeting.
Are there questions? You get off easy tonight.
I have a question.
Dan?
It's an easy one. It's an easy one. Are you continuing your discussion with the Office of Human Rights at the next HHS meeting?
We most likely will. There was some homework stuff that Karen and Xavier were going to work on, and we might have some updates from the state as well. So we will continue this discussion and hopefully also, if time permits, take up T21 again.
Is that Monday, November 21st at 3:30? Does that sound right?
I think that's the time of our meeting, the third Monday.
Thank you.
At 3:30.
Anything else? Thank you, Leslie.
Dan just wants to hear my voice.
That was a softball. Come on.
I think we're up to the minutes of the previous meeting, October 18th. Does anyone want to move them? Peter, seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Is there any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? Peter, seconded by Dave. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you all. Good meeting.